get the deal.
His two henchmen fell down on him. Not yet. In 1923, I was in the real estate business in Los Angeles. And I had a picture on my desk of an old man with a white beard down about his navel. And the caption was, "I'm an old man. And I've had many troubles, most of which never happened." I like it real good. This is, we decided just this to be a question period. And Chuck Borden has the first question. Decisions. I don't know, Chuck. We'll think about it. I don't know whether it'll be too quick to do it again next year or not. You got to change a little between them, you know. And I don't know whether we can go very much in a year. We're not as green as we used to. It's been 12 years since last, and I think it's just about right. 12 years. But I think about it, I think it's nice for somebody to think that they might want it. So I thank you for that. What's the next question?
Should we work with high-kicking alcoholics before we have taken all the steps ourselves?
I think that's the very moment that a guy decides he wants what we have and becomes willing to go to any length to get it. He is ready to work with alcoholics. Not that he tries to carry the message to alcoholics, but that he tries to carry the alcoholic to the message. As soon as we've decided that we want what's here, we could tell anybody, look, I found a place that seems to manufacture sobriety. Bunch of guys that are doing something about their drinking. And they have impressed me very much. And I'm going to meet. How about going with you? we carry the alcoholic's message. The bookie says, obviously, we can't transmit something we don't have. That's what you're referring to. But you don't have to, you don't have to be anything but kind to carry a message. Really, that's all. The love.
Okay. In our society, how do we deal with emotion? A. Others we work with in the program. B. In our own
society. I got into that, I guess. I said sobriety was fourfold. Physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Emotional would just be one of the areas of our lives that have to become strong. For instance, if we're going to work with alcoholics, we can't afford to become emotionally involved in their program. Or in their problem, I mean. Not in their program, in their problem. We can't afford to become emotionally involved in the problem, or we lose all of our possibility for help. Let us go above the problem. Now, it seems like maybe that would be a sort of a cold attitude. It is not. You have to love more to stay emotionally involved, uninvolved in the problem, than you do to become involved in it. The answer is not in the problem. The answer is in the answer. I worked on my problem for 10 years. And the more I looked at the problem and the harder I worked on the problem, the greater the problem became. It was just like fertilizing, watering, and cultivating a weed. Grew out of all proportions. And I think we have to be able to live above the problem to be of value to those who have it. We don't get emotionally involved in the problem. It's not that we love less, it's that we love more. I think it takes much more love to release than it does to hold on to. Emotional stability comes, I am sure, out of this thing we call self-discovery. Physical sobriety comes from not drinking. We don't drink today. And after a while, we are physically free from the effects of alcohol. But until we become emotionally stable, mentally stable, and spiritually somewhat stable, we're not sober. Sobriety is the ability to live comfortably, peacefully, and joyously with oneself. I find much confusion in this area of becoming emotionally involved in the problems of our so-called babies. Many people think you've got to be emotionally involved in. And I think we completely stymie ourselves when we do that.
What about sex after sobriety?
Is there anybody here who wants to cover that up?
Oh,
You want to speak on that?
What is the value of patience when counseling with another alcoholic?
we had all the alcoholics in the world in this room, right now, we would have 90% of the impatience of the human race. We are a very impatient lot. We want everything to happen yesterday. And patience is certainly a virtue. I doubt very much if our value as a counselor would equal our value as a listener. If you can get the guy talking, or the gal, you can get them talking. This is the deal. In my own case, if I'm talking to somebody new, the one thing that I listen for is the first attempt at a belly laugh. This ain't no big deal. This ain't get serious. An alcoholic cannot take a preachment or a lecture. We know all about the preachment and the lecture. We've given them to ourselves 1,000 times. We know exactly what they're going to say before they say it. And so, the sharing and to get them to talk and be a good listener gives the counselor more value than talking himself. We're not experts on anything. And it's the simple little thing that opens the door. It isn't the profundity. Nobody ever got sober on profundity. Nobody. It's a little thing. Many of you heard me tell this, that I was talking at this Bob White group many years ago. On Santa Barbara and Van Ness. And there was a drunk in bad shape sitting right about there where the castle is sitting. And came time for him to light a cigarette. And he couldn't do it. He couldn't get the things to make. And he struggled. And after a while, a little lady that was sitting next to him reached over and took a cigarette and his match and lit it and put it in his mouth. And the next year, I was there at the same time. And this guy got his birthday, first birthday. And I thought, well, I must have done pretty well, you know, in that talk. So I was prepared to get a nice compliment, you know, when he got up to take his birthday cake. And he said the reason he was back was not what was said or done in the meeting. It was the fact that this little old lady had lit a cigarette for him. Thing don't depend on profundity or expertise. It's love. And love is patient. Love is patient. Everyone that I love to think about it. It happened the Harbor Group. I talked there on Friday before Christmas every year. And 10 or 12 years ago, there was a guy from Long Wall. Every bank is Long Wall. And he was leaping. He wasn't shaking. He was leaping. And And I went home and sat down beside him before the meeting started. And I put my arm around the guy. And I said, son, this ain't no big deal. If you don't drink, if you don't take that next drink, 3 days you'll be putting really well, physically. Just put it off. Don't take that next drink. It ain't no big deal. Make a game out of it. And go for 3 days without a drink. See what happens to you. And for years, he's gone by me, or at least once a year in some meeting. And he gets right up to my left ear and he says, son, it ain't no big deal. And he goes on about his business. So, yes, if you love him, you're patient. Next.
How do we surrender and turn our will to God when after asking for guidance, we still ponder at times?
There are many times when even prayer is like braying up a chimney. No way can they seem to make any conscious contact with anything. Anything futile. You have no purchase at all up there on the end of that line. And that's what the book means when it says when everything else fails, get your wet drunk. Because, you see, when we're feeling futile, we want something. We want something. And it isn't happening. And there's no way that we can want something while you're working with a wet drug. No way. You can't think about yourself when you're working with a wet drug. That's one place where you give all your attention and love to the thing it has. It is just simply to outmaneuver it. To neither be the puking or the puke off in that case. So we got to get ourselves off our mind. Now, I have a thing of my own. I can't solve a problem. No way I can solve a problem. And I haven't tried it much. In the last 29 years, because I've expected guidance and direction. But if I wake up to the fact that I'm all tied in a knot, working on something, and I'm just completely rigid almost. Subconsciously, I've been messing with this thing and beating my brains out. And I recognize it. And this is my little deal, and it works for me right along. I, as I said to you, I share everything with my own God. Good, bad, and indifferent. And in this case, I say, look, Dad, I'm beating my brains out over this problem, and I don't know the answer. You do. And when you get ready to give it to me, I'll certainly be glad to have it. Sure thank you. And I dump it. And I never look at it again.
I just dump it. That's it.
Let me in a quick, please.
Go out and quick.
Brady of TV Land's The Brady Bunch set out to become a rock star, what stage name?
There's nothing more highly recommended than to sit down with a wet drum. Does that do you any good?
With Eagle and Sal taking over periodically, do I analyze and look for answers too much?
We're a mess.
If I were you, I'd just give up.
I find so many of our people, even in the grapevine, I find so many of them writing about self-esteem, building self-esteem. I hear people get up here and talk all the time about you have to learn to love yourself before you can love anybody else. And I am most grateful that that ain't the case. I never spend any time trying to build up self-esteem. I never spend any time trying to love me. I wouldn't have taken me with a large dowry. I hated my damn guts. And so, I got busy doing things this book suggests. And it wasn't trying to learn how to self-esteem me or to love me so I could love you. I don't think that is the way it is at all. Francis says, for it is better to love than to be loved. It is better to understand than to be understood. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in forgiving that we're forgiven. And it is in dying to self that we awaken to eternal life. And that's exactly what we've been talking about ever since we've been down here. That's exactly what we've been talking about. I don't believe that an image fell. I don't believe that an image of me would add anything to my life at all. I haven't any more image of me than I have of a walrus. That isn't what I'm interested in. I'm not interested in an image of me. That's not why I'm here. I'm here to share news with anybody that wants me in love and let the trip forward in me. I'm not even interested in your opinion of what's happened, except when you want to give it to me. That's not my deal. I love you. I love you, and that's all I have to do. That's what I'm interested in. That's my deal. It's not my deal who you love or what you love or what you do. That's your deal. I love you, period. I don't even have to concern myself about what you think of me. I've got no image at all of me. I think of myself exactly as that big window up there in front of my chair. That window to me is me. And when there's no obstruction, the light comes through. But the window is not the light. And I think of that grief as my ego. And when that grief's closed, the light don't come through. But just as the window is not the light, the grief is not the darkness. It just sets out the light. So my business is keep the drape open, Bill, and let the light shine. And I don't finish the light. I'm a channel. I'm a channel. You and I are necessary to God as channels through which he goes forth into his creation. The channels. Then we get ourselves out of the way and let it be. And let it be. Now, as we said last night, and as I say to me all the time, I'm either going to run my life and take the consequences thereof, or I'm not going to run it and take the consequences thereof, and I can't run mine. And I don't get involved in running my life. I get involved in living. I think losing yourself in life guarantees finding yourself in God. Guarantees it. Because all you got to do is to get rid of the roadblock. You lose yourself in life and find yourself in God. And Phil, I wouldn't, if I were you, I wouldn't spend another 5 seconds trying to find self-worth or anything else. To find yourself, yes. To realize that whatever it is you're looking for is right here. What you're looking for, you're looking with. What you came here to get came with you. Everything you ever wanted to know, you've always known, and everything you've always wanted to do, you've always been. But it's covered up. It's covered up. So uncover and discover. And get lost in that building. Forget about you. To hell with you. And you got a little better break on that than I had. Maybe you have and maybe you ain't. Phil's got a little income. So it allows him to have a little more time on his hands than maybe he should have. Well, you know, I think that's it. Forget about old Phil and just do, and let the chips fall where they may. The beautiful thing about this deity is not to get serious about yourself. To make the whole deal a game. A play of life upon itself. And you have fun out of it. I have more fun with God than I do with you. I have a hell of a lot of fun with the guy. I think that the guy has a tremendous sense of humor. Or he wouldn't have hit himself in the last place he ever looked. You know. I think it's true. The very last place he ever looked. There he is. I can just see him, you know. Here I am trying to find a bottle. Off hours, you know, and I've got to have a drink. He says, look at that son of a bitch. He's not seeing it. I'm looking. Oh, I love it. It's a fun deal. You're too serious, Phil. Just make it. Make a fun deal out of it. Huh? That help any?
Well, should members of AA work professionally in the field of alcoholism?
Were some of you counselors, Andrew Allen? I do not really, care much to comment on it, but I would say this. It's awfully hard. It's awfully hard for amateurs like us to get mixed up with the professionals and stay amateurs. We're a strange bunch. All we have to do is to rub elbows a little while with the doctor and we become doctors. Maybe some people can retain their amateur standing in working for money in field alcoholism. I don't know. Maybe they can. But in my personal life, I've met only one that seemed to do it, and he wasn't around long enough to really see whether it was going to work out or not. And that was Warren Snyder. Warren died about a year or so after, 2 years after he started working in the field of alcoholism for money. Now, the one thing that would seem to be furthest from a paid cross-check call would be working with the National Committee on Alcoholism. Because the National Committee on Alcoholism has no recovery program at all. They are educational and referral. That's their business, and that's not the business we're in. So it would appear that there would be no conflict to work for the National Committee on Alcoholism. So they have no program of recovery. But those of my friends who work with them somehow become special. I'm mindful of one gal I love very, very much. And 10 years ago, she made one of the finest day talks I ever heard in my life. And she became an employee, secretary, Committee on Alcoholism, and she talked to our group a year ago, yes. And she made just the finest talk she ever made. But it was an Alcoholics Anonymous talk. It was a professional talk. It was a professional talk. And the one thing about us that we must maintain is caring and sharing. We're not experts on anything. We share our experience, strength, and hope. One with another in love. And so I haven't seen anybody even be able to do that kind of thing without seeming to get along with inspection, professionalism. Incidentally, it wasn't 3 months after that talk that she was in the hospital herself. Not, I'm sure, for either pills or drinking. Actually, I'm sure. I'm not sure of anything. I'm like, Phil, I don't know nothing. But she was in the hospital for sort of a breakdown of some kind. I can't do it. Personally, when I talk for organizations that have an honorarium, the thing I do carries an honorarium for, say, $75 to $150. I don't take it. I don't take it. Because whilst we don't know it, I'm just completely rich. I learned what I'm telling them from you guys. From drunks who don't drink. And I can't eat any more turkey on her end than I can fly. Because you guys didn't tell me a thing. You didn't even ask me if I had anything. The only thing you said to me was, mister, were you looking for somebody? And I said, no, sir. She said, well, what were you looking for? And I said, there was a dentist, sir. I was looking for sobriety. And you lit up like a Christmas tree. Took me in a rockman sleep. Now I'm certain that any alcoholic is totally free to make a living. I think we're entitled to make a living. But if I were a preacher, excuse me, David. If I were a preacher, I would want my business on the side. Because I would not want to get up here and try to tell you monkeys what you want to hear. I would not want my gas and water in your hands. If you don't like me, you cut off my gas and water. So I've got to try to please you. I can't do that. I want my business on the side. I want my money coming in from here. So I can tell you what I think. I can't talk without saying it as I feel it, as I think that it should be. And I can't work in that field. But if I were captain in the Marines, and they wanted me to head up a program of alcoholism to the Marines, and I could set up my own staff, as certain Marines have had the privilege of doing, I might do what the captain and the Marines who asked that question did. He turned around and he said, what am I going to do? I said, get your staff to handle the related disorders. With all these people that you have working with you, to handle their hot heads, the bill heads, the sick maniacs, like, who was that? Yeah, because most of them are women. Because we loaned them our program, you know. And after a while, she got smart pants. And she started saying we wouldn't have needed the program if you hadn't gone through it.
I don't see why I should go anyplace else or have to go anyplace else to find out how to work my program in Alcoholics Anonymous. As far as I'm concerned, I don't see the need of it. Long before Alcoholics Anonymous, before Al-Anon was born, when people were coming to me and saying, you got to get this guy sober, or this gal sober, I was saying to them, maybe, this is the best time in your life to find yourself. Maybe the only chance you've got to help this alky is not to come to me, but to apply these principles to yourself. Find your own peace. And maintain your own peace in your own household. And it might be the only good thing you can do for that drunk. That's a long time before I'll never fall. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to find living answers in our program, which we must find along with the bride. And I don't mind going to Al-Anon meetings. I talk before Al-Anon meetings right here. As a matter of fact, you people don't know it. But you're looking at the greatest Al-Anon speaker there is. Two years ago, Food from Dallas called me. Oh, in Lancaster, I guess that's Swedish or something. I don't know what it is. And it was Thursday. And Owen picked up when can you leave for Dallas? I said, I'm not coming. Oh, says, yes, you are. I said, I'm not coming to Dallas. He said, I asked you when you can leave. And then he said, I'm not coming. And he said, I don't want that kind of an answer. I'm related. As this boo fell down on you, what's the matter with the speaker you asked? Why did you ask me first? Who went out on you? He says, you're your goddamn dick. Well, to make a long story short, I flew to Dallas and talked at the Al-Anon luncheon. And I was a substitute for a substitute. The first one that had agreed to talk to the Al-Anon luncheon was the late Liz. You know, the gal who wrote the book, the late Liz. What was her name? Gert Bahana. Gertie and I don't get along too well anyway. But she was the gal that was supposed to talk. And she pooped out. And the next one was Adela Rogers St. John's. And she pooped out. So I'm a substitute for two boards. Substitute for a substitute. And they still say down there that I get the best Al-Anon talk to them. So, I guess we got in to make it hard. Now, there's no reason you shouldn't go to an Al-Anon meeting to talk to. Next, how do you prove love? Well, I don't think that you prove anything. I don't think we've got anything to prove. Nothing to win, and we're not going anyplace. I'll have to tell you again, I said this in this meeting already, but I'll spell it again because I love it myself. This certain doctor called me at midnight. And he says, what's your definition of love? I said, same as this 10 o'clock in the morning. What the hell are you calling me at midnight and asking me what the definition of love is? He says, what's your definition of love? I think you won't like it. He says, what is it? I said, that's it. To talk about love is like talking about humility. I feel very humble this morning, boys. Action. If you love somebody or something, you do something for them. You go through it. And you don't make a big deal out of it. You don't make a big deal out of it. I wouldn't spend 5 seconds trying to prove anything that I said from this podium to anybody here. That's not why I'm here. To prove something. And spend 5 seconds trying to defend anything I said. I have a right to my own opinion. And you have a right to yours. And you have my approval. If you want to disagree with everything I've said and the way I've said it, we're going all right with you. And the same thing is true with people everywhere. I love you. It's none of my business what you think of me, unless you want to make it something. So quit trying to make something out of it. Prove it. Next.
Upon waking with negative thoughts, how does one establish a relationship with God?
I think this is what we've been talking about all weekend, too. Praying without ceasing. I find no difference in a prayer and a serious thought. The same thing, as we said since we've been here. Fear, worry, is a prayer for something you don't ask. To live in the conscious awareness of the living presence of God. I don't even like too much. I talk about it an awful lot, but the Our Father prayer. Our Father, God. I talk about Our Father lots. But this relationship that we've been talking about this weekend is much, much closer than a father-son relationship. As I said, I've got 2 sons someplace in Southern California. I don't know where either one of them are. This is impossible. With my relationship with my own God. Because God is that which I am. God is that which I am. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't be. There would be nothing. I would be extinct but for God. Because God is life. And there's no way to be separated from God in reality. The only separation there is consciousness. The feeling of conscious separation from that fear. Very real as an experience, but not reality. So, I don't think that we ought to work out feeling any difference than we want to see. Or feeling any feeling different than 10 minutes after we get up. Now is the deal. How is it with me right now? How is it with me right now? Now, if I had to get up and start praying right quick to feel good, I don't think I'd feel good when I come through praying. they ought to feel your love for us, Dr. Briggs. And again, my prayers, I don't know when they start and stop. I feel like Brother Lawrence a little in that deal. Because I like to live in the conscious awareness of the living presence of God. And a relationship with everything around me. Everything around me. So I think that's the thing to sort of get through your head. That now is the time. You see, this is so very vital to me because tomorrow is always the day I was going to straighten up and fly right. Tomorrow I was going to do it, you know. But tomorrow I never got here. Every time I came to, it was now, and I was thirsty. So what are you doing? Tomorrow I never got here. And again, I don't think I have to be in any particular position to retain this feeling of the living presence of God. I don't think that it happens in a church or in the mountain or in the temple or in Jerusalem. It's in my own mouth that I might know it.
When did you really start trusting God all the way?
I don't know. I don't know, because I've discovered that it has happened, you see. I think it happened when this thing was burned out the first time. I think that's when it happened, because I was in here, this was me, all the time. You know. But to be born out of conscious separation and conscious unity makes it a reality. A belief in God is good, but it is not good enough for alcoholics. We have to live in God. To live in God. That's what this whole thing is all about. To get us out of our own way. So that we can go about our Father's business. That's the only business I've had for 29 years. I'm in a business. I go about my Father's business. And that's my business and Chris' business to take care of. And it's just as natural and normal as breathing. I expect it. Not that I'm sitting around in an expecting thing waiting for somebody to pick up the phone or to ring it. It's just my duty. I know that every good and perfect gift is from His hand. Father Barney said to me 10 years ago, we were driving under the Garden Grove Freeway. I was taking him home with me. We'd been to the office. And just as we went under the freeway, he said to me, Chuck, how in the hell do you fulfill your commitments? He said, what are you talking about? He said, you've got 3 lives. And any one of them's enough for anybody. And you do all 3 of them. How you doing? And I said, Father, you ought to know that better than I do. You're damn chubby. You've been studying all your life. Why'd you ask me that question? He said, why? How do you do it? And I said, there's no division in my life. There's no division in my life. When we practice these principles in all of our affairs, gentlemen, there is no division in life. There is nothing that is more or less important, and there's nothing that is more or less spiritual than another. Your business is just as spiritual as your AA. Your AA is just as spiritual as your church. Your home is just as spiritual as both of them. Substance is just as spiritual as, joy. Just as spiritual. Every good and perfect gift is from his hand. And to live in this, to be aware of this, constantly aware. And that's what I was telling you yesterday. To trim the sails. To trim the sails. Some ships fly east and some fly west by the self-same wind that blows. 'Tis the set of the sail and not the gale that determines where it goes. And so, trimming the sail. Trim to myself more than 50 times a day. That is my refuge and my strength. I don't know why I do that. I'm not afraid of nothing. I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of God. I'm not afraid of the devil. I'm not afraid of tomorrow or yesterday. Why would I be saying God is my refuge and my strength? Lift up your eyes into the hills from whence cometh thy strength. I love the hills. I love God. And I trim the sails, reminding myself that in him I live and move and have my being. The conscious awareness of the living presence of the Almighty. And that's what this retreat's all about. There's nothing else here, so far as I'm concerned. I'm either going to run my life and take the consequences thereof, or I'm not going to run it and take the consequences thereof. And those are not words. That's the way I live. And I cannot live any other way. I did it 43 years. And that was 43 years too long. What do you want to do?
I've always been a competitor. How do I remove competition from my life?
It's the same thing to me, Jim. But I have been a competitor all my life. I was corrected this morning because there's a man here 3 years older than I am. Should overlook it, but he had a very sheltered youth. I could do anything with my body up until I got hurt. I could do anything. Football, basketball, baseball, and track. The whole business was just duck soup. Old Walter Camp said years ago, the only way I could keep from being an All-American was to get hurt. So I got hurt. Got removed from football. Competition was my life. I had a brother that was 3.5 years older than I. And we were competitors. From the time I could walk until I left home at 20, we were in a fight. Lasted 20 years on the installment plan. And he was 3.5 years older than I and 3.5 years stronger. And up until I was 18, 19, 20, he could whip me. But he couldn't make me believe it. He could not make me believe it. We started a fight, his kid, 2 miles from home. And every time he got off of me, I'd dog him. And we'd end up in the living room and mother'd whip us both. And I left home at 20, thinking I could whip that guy. He never did make me believe that he could trick me. So, competition, yes, it was my life. Now I do a lot of lawn bowling. And if I go down there to beat somebody, I'm like a washwoman. It's just like I never had a bowl in my hand. But if I go down there to do the best I can with what I got, and enjoy my competitor's shot just the same as my own, I beat anybody on the place. 1957, I was famous champion of Beverly Hills Lawn Bowling Club. And I only bowl twice a week. I bowl Saturday and Sunday. And all the rest of them bowl all the day. And you know, that's a delicate game, lawn bowling. So I can't compete with anybody. And again, it is not because I decided not to compete. You see, I'm lucky. I'm lucky. Because I didn't want nothing when I came here, not even sobriety. I just wanted to rub out as much of the record as I could. And you can't rub out a record thinking, you know, in terms of competition. You can't do it. You just help people do things they need to have done because you want to. And I had to do that to rub out. And when I finally woke up to the fact that things were going good, I was in a habit of it. And I just kept doing it. And I'm still doing it. And I believe this is the thing that we're here talking about. Our civilization has laid so many things on us that are totally extraneous. You have to be this and have that and be known as before you can live. You know? And the only thing you can do with life, gentlemen, is live it. Being is the only thing that counts. The universe of the now is the only thing that counts in this life. Take no thought of tomorrow, what you should eat, what you should drink, or whether or not you should be clothed. The Heavenly Father knows what you have need of before you have it. Now then, my son, it's so much more fun to get as much fun out of your opponent's shot as your own. It's so much more fun. It's twice as much. And if you're in a fourth of it, it's four times as much. You know? It's normal and natural that you wish your supposed leg or your so-called competition well. Wish them well. They do their thing and you do yours. And there's no competition if you're doing it right. There's no competition. There's no feeling of competition in it. Now, just while I got it on my mind, all you got to do, everything that this thing about, is shifting the motivation in your life. That's all you got to do. Shift your motivation from taking something from to giving something to adding to. Even when you go to a meeting, and I want to know. Shift your motivation from going to get to going to add to. From the time I discovered I was sober, 6 months after I got here, until right now, I have never gone to a meeting to get anything. And I can't go to a bad meeting. I can go to a meeting and disagree with everything that's done in it. The speaker and everything he says in the way he says it. And come out with a full cup. Because it always happens if you go hoping that somebody just seeing you might get a lift, you know. It might do somebody good just to see you then. And maybe somebody will ask you a question that you can answer, that you can share. And you can't come away from that thing without a flow cup. And it's just shifting your attitude from taking from to adding to. And it builds throughout your life, everything in life. And it's not a do-gooder attitude. God damn the do-gooder attitude. Morning, Dave. It's not that you want to be, you know, to be a do-gooder. As we said yesterday, to be good for something is self-robbery, even if it's to go to heaven. To be good for something is self-robbery. To be good for nothing. That's the fun here. Just to be good for nothing.
How do I overcome the existence of my family and business associates that I should make plans